BDSM, often misunderstood and stigmatized, is a complex world of trust, power dynamics, and exploration beyond society's conventional understanding of sexuality. Joining us today is Karma Said, a nationally acclaimed author and key voice in the sexually alternative movement. Karma's confessional memoir, Surviving Master Joshua, the BDSM memoir of an unfaithful wife, won the Independent Press Award for its deep dive into her own journey into BDSM and non-monogamy. As a journalist, mother, and advocate for the recognition of kinky as a sexual identity, Karma navigates the world of alternative lifestyles with unflinching honesty. Today, we'll explore her personal journey, the nuances of BDSM, and how these taboo topics intersect with the societal perceptions of everybody else. Here we go. Karma, I am excited to have you on the show today.
Me too. Thank you for that beautiful intro. That was very touching to be recognized on that level.
Well, I love this subject, and I wanted to always ask someone questions about it. And
bring
so
it on.
We get to ask new amazing questions. So I want to start by establishing, you know, first of all, what is BDSM? And then delve in maybe into your personal journey with Master Joshua. And we can end up by talking about your current work, future plans, and all sorts of stuff. So awesome. Yeah, just start us off. What and how would you describe what BDSM is so that everyone is on the same page while we talk about this?
Well, okay, the literal definition that you can get off the internet of BDSM is it's a compound acronym for bondage and discipline, or dominance and submission, or sadism and masochism.
It's a lot. Wrapped
yeah.
up in there.
So it's all the it's all these ways in which people can exert or experience power over each other.
Okay.
And that's the definition of it. And for me, BDSM is more of a life philosophy.
Yeah. What attracted you to it? Like, explain
what attracted
that.
Me to it. Well, there's quite a backstory. Do you want the backstory?
I would love to hear the backstory, because I imagine there's people who are watching or going to watch, and they're going like, "Well, I've thought about it, but I need some insight."
Well, I never actually considered trying anything. I, like many people, I read about it in books and saw movies and such, but I didn't actually think it exists as a culture, and I didn't think it would be accessible to me. I thought it's, you know, werewolves and millionaires, you know, 50 Shades and fiction.
Yeah.
Mostly I thought it was fiction. But I am a journalist, and one day I was working on a story about religious people in the New York kink scene. And the person who connected me was Master Joshua, my source. He was introducing me to the world, and for the sake of the story. And in our introductory phone call, he asked, so what do you know about BDSM? What's your level of familiarity? And I said, well, 50 Shades. So he was like, so you know nothing. So you should come to an event and see how it looks like in real life before you start writing about people in it. So you have at least a clue. So he arranged an event, which was a round table in which people who are religious and kinky came and spoke about the intersection of their religious or spiritual and kinky identities. And afterwards, there was a play party. So I came to the event, and this was the first time I met him in person. We spoke on the phone before. Mostly I spoke to his partner at the time, and I got to talk to the people there. They were instantly relatable because their parents, I am married with two kids.
Mm-hmm.
And these are people like me, married, kids, managers, company people, people who are, you know, normal people. And
so you found Joshua through, because of your journalism, and you want to write about this topic of BDSM.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah. How did you find him?
Actually, a friend working in the paper. I just told a co-writer that, a co-worker, that I was interested in shifting into more risque topics. And she said, I got somebody for you.
I got somebody for you. I got something for you.
Right. Yeah, she was like, not for me, but I got somebody for you. And the person was Joshua's partner. She didn't even know about Joshua.
Okay.
So her, the partner was had an affiliation with religious people in the kink scene. She had an intersection there. And she also organized kink events regardless of that intersection.
Explain something to me here, because I'm not... you just blew my mind with this just a second ago, and I let it go because I wanted to hear what else you said. But you were talking about religious people in the kink scene.
Mm-hmm.
How does that come together? Because most people think religious over here, kink scene over here, and they do not mix.
Well, now that I'm in here, I see there's a lot of crossover between the search for meaning and a search for spirituality and a search for something kind of like a system that is somewhat bigger than everyday life, and the practice of BDSM, not just kink, but BDSM in particular, kink as well, but BDSM in particular, because it has that element of worship in it, or more than worship, it has an element of, it's very similar to religion in its, it has customs, it has religious, it has ceremonies, it has protocols, it has, and it has a hierarchy, and it has an element of devotion in it. I wouldn't say worship, but definitely devotion. So it's kind of like if you did not find that God is a more, God is somewhere out there, you know, God is an abstract.
Okay.
But a person whose feet you can kiss. Now that is a very real, visceral manifestation of devotion. And I think it's the same urges. And that's kind of what led me to choose that story. Because so I wanted to examine the spiritual roots of it. Yeah. Say it again?
Let's talk about a couple other things too. I want to make sure we understand kink. What is kink? And then I want to talk about the different roles. But tell me about kink, first of all. What does that mean for people who are just watching?
Well, kink is sort of an umbrella term for everything that is not mainstream sexual identity. So, and it's a very broad and vague term, right? It could be, so it could be anything from, ooh, that's kinky because I like having sex when my hands are tied behind my back, or I like being slapped, or I like my hair being pulled, to, I can only come if somebody pisses in my mouth while I jerk, you know, various, and tell me if I'm getting too graphic, but,
we'll beep you if we have to, but I don't think we do yet.
Kink is what people use to refer to. Again, the definition to it, the, if you Google it, it comes up as sexual, unusual sexual practices that are not common. Is basically the definition of what kink is. Gotcha. Now you can break it down into many groups, subgroups, subcultures, some of them semi-official, some of them completely a trend of the moment. Fetish and kink are not interchangeable, though they are very similar. A fetish is a... adoration of an object or a person that goes beyond the actual context of that object or person. And key, but people often use them interchangeably, regardless of their official definition.
Okay, well, we'll use kink today. Yes. At least I will, because now I understand what kink is. There's a couple other things that I wanted to go into, and that would also be, what is, there's it's, what's the word I'm looking for? there's the dominant person and there's a submissive person. True. So I guess there's the dom and mm-hmm. the submissive, right?
There's a top and a bottom, yeah. And okay. They can choose various roles in that, but yeah. It could be a daddy and a baby, or a daddy and a girl, or a daddy and a child of some sort. It could be a master and a slave. It could be a dom. There's various variations on that power gap, but there is a power gap.
Okay. And now, is that what the BDSM is about, is the power gap and one person being sort of the dominant, one person being submissive, and then who chooses which is which and who is who?
Okay. I wouldn't say that's what BDSM is all about. Okay. I would say that's part of what it's about. There, it's a key factor of it, but that's kind of like saying, is love about there being a man and a woman, or is love about there being two people? It's a facet of a key facet, but it does not, it's not the end all of it. Mm-hmm. And what was the other part of the question?
Well, I guess I'm trying to determine, you have a top and a bottom or a dominant.
Who decides?
Yeah, who decides, and how do you get to be one or the other?
Well, there's various ways to decide. Many, some of them have to do with how a person presents himself, right? Just like, I'm top, I'm bottom. What role do you want to play okay. when you're walking into a space? So that's part of it. But another part of it is, what role, who are you really? How do you interact with other people? It's almost like being a dominant or a submissive in relation to another person. And it's always in relation to another person. Mm-hmm. You're not anything, period. You're not a dominant, period, because when another person walks into the room and you sense an awe towards him and a respect and a wish to serve him or her, or a wish to... Dominance and submissive are relative terms, just like tall or skinny or yes. young. So it's always relative to who you are interacting with. And how it's decided, two people meet each other and they know.
Okay.
They have the roles they want to play, but there's also who they are to each other naturally.
Okay. Let's go a little deeper. Like, when you have a group of people who are into BDSM, mm-hmm. do they all work together, or is it an interaction only between the two people, or how does the group dynamic work?
Well, that really depends on the each scene to itself. As in, a BDSM interaction is called a scene.
A scene?
A scene, yes. Okay. How a scene goes, how many people are involved, who's leading the scene, it all is determined by the negotiation that happens before the scene. As in, before you start playing, you speak to the people involved. People involved talk to each other and they say what they want. What do they want to feel? What do they want to do? What do they want to experience? What can they and can't they experience? What their limitations are? Negotiation is not often highlighted, but it is probably the most important step of the interaction, even more important than technical skills, which are very important in when you come down to interact with people on a physical level. But how many people and who does what to whom is determined before the scene when you negotiate. Mm-hmm. If it happens spontaneously, then once again, it happens between a group of people who know each other, let's say, right?
Yes.
If it happens spontaneously, then it happens just like, I don't know, like jamming would happen, or or playing on a playground would happen. Yeah. It could also happen like that.
Jamming, I get, since I'm a musician. Yes, I get that one. You started out, you wanted to do something with your journalism that was a little bit more risque. Mm-hmm. You found BDSM, you found Master Joshua, but you're also married and have kids.
Right.
Now, how did that work out? I mean, how did you explain to your husband? It's like, well, I can understand the first one where it goes, I'm going to this party and the scene, and I'm just going to be an observer. But now you've gone further. How did that happen, and how was it taken by your family?
Well, coming back from the, at that party, I watched people play for the first time ever. They like I said, they were all normal people when I interviewed them. And then the lights were turned off. The music was turned on. They all left the room and they came back in their gear, in their fetish clothes, you know, in leather and latex and body suits on leashes and collars, all the everything looking completely different.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, whoa. shit just became real. I was like, oh, this is not an MTV video. This is not a music video.
Right. This is not for real. Video. It's okay.
And I was alarmed. And alarmed is a strong word, but I was like a little bit on edge and thinking, wow, they're nothing like me at all. But watching them play slowly as the evening unfolded, there something just came over me. I was very compelled. I felt like kind of like I was part of this, as if it was like a tribal ceremony or something kind of deep and elemental, kind of like the feeling you get when you're in a drum circle on the beach and something just settles over you and you're in it. You're in it.
Uh-huh.
It's sort of, and it was very extremely visceral and raw and vulnerable. And I wouldn't say it was beautiful, that there, it was the interactions themselves. There's touches of grotesque, right? You're not used to seeing people like that. They're not gorgeous models. They're middle-aged older people with not imperfect bodies.
Mm-hmm.
But the rawness of the interaction just spoke to me very powerfully. I was like, so this is how it can be. This is how we could, how deep it could be with other people that you don't even know. This is how powerful human interaction can get with people you don't even know. And I had to come back. I felt like this is, I found my people. I found my thing. It was electric. Even just talking about it, all the
when you got home, what did you say to your husband? What was the conversation?
When I got home, he was asleep. But the next day, I started talking about it, and I said, I said it was really interesting, and I'm very interested. I want to explore more.
Uh-huh.
However, Joshua caught my eye from the first moment. And even though I was talking a lot to my husband about everything I saw and I felt, and I didn't talk about Joshua. Uh-huh. And he was there from day one. After the event, he was like, he checked in with me. He was like, so what did you think? He asked me to write about it, which eventually became, you know, the book.
The book, yeah.
Yeah, he asked me to write my experience from that evening, to journal it for him and let him see. And that's how the whole book was born. That's the seed of it. And the fact that my husband was not receptive to this. He's not interested. He was like, woman, we've got a house to renovate. We've got preschool applications to fill. We've got so many things on our plate. This is not the time.
Uh-huh. Now, young. So you used the word he was not interested. Was he against it? Or was he just like, you go do your thing. I'm going to go to the Model Airplane Club.
It wasn't exactly you go do your thing. When we got to talking about it, because really it was busy. By the time we got to talk about it, I've been talking to Joshua. Let's say my husband kept that door closed, but Joshua threw his wide open. And as my husband refused to talk about it, Joshua was talking a lot.
Your husband meet Joshua or no?
I got to meet him 2 days after. we had an interest in each other pretty much from day one. Mm-hmm. His interest, well, I never know, right? For real, what were his motives in the time? But I do know that he considers normalizing BDSM and talking about it with the media like highest priority. And I was a journalist who wanted to do a story about him. So he was like, let me bring you into my world. At that point, accusations of abuse started to surface against him, but mm-hmm. I'll keep that for later. The question was about my husband. He was not interested. The whole topic was kind of like, ugh, for him a little bit. And when I forced the conversation, I was like, listen, I really want to pursue this. He was worried. He said, I'm very worried. I don't want to do it. And I said, well, I can't not do it. Come with me. Uh-huh. Do this. Let's do this together. Even if you're not interested, let's do this. And he was like, I don't want to explore it myself. I'm not interested. And I know I'm not interested. But I'm not going to tell you no. Because if you feel this speaks to you, this made you feel alive, you found some part of yourself that you were missing, I'm not going to be the person to step on you. I'm not going to be the person to cage you. So go out and explore, but I'm very worried about where this might lead. And I told him, I'll keep an eye out. I'll be safe. But didn't work out that way.
So he never went with you to one of the scenes. You kept doing it, and you kept hanging out yourself with Joshua. And
the idea was never to cheat. The idea was to learn and to bring it home. Mm-hmm. And Joshua was just like, okay, you opened the door for me. Now I'm going to walk in and find this whole world. But I walked in and found Joshua.
Now, so when was the first time that you actually went to the scene and you had your own outfit, whatever it is that you call your outfits, and you decided to actually play along with the rest of the group?
Years later.
So the whole, okay.
Because the whole, this outfit that you see was born out of the need to talk on podcasts as an author who did not want to out her husband publicly.
Yes.
So this is why the outfit. Joshua was my mentor from the beginning. And I think it took me about 3 days to fall in love with him. Mm-hmm. It took him much longer, but there was a backstory here too. See, Joshua was at the time facing accusations of abuse. It was 2018, the height of the Me Too movement. And the Me Too movement kind of began rolling into the kink scene with force. Really? Of course, now when it's hard enough to understand what is proper and not proper and what is a consent violation and how to treat it in everyday circumstances, when it comes to the kink scene, that's like throwing a match into a hay pile. Because nobody can... How can you tell what is consensual and not consent? I mean, the people know, right? The people know because they negotiated it among themselves.
Okay.
But it's a very volatile area. So one of Joshua's, an ex-girlfriend, an ex-play partner, they broke up, and after they broke up, she posted accusations online against him. Now, this is the kink scene. It's not a regulated, in the broader world, in the broader culture, it was mayhem, right? There was people falling over themselves, trying to both incriminate and defend themselves. There was just like this, remember that? This domino of important people just falling to these, and these are bad actors, and they needed to be weeded out. But as it rolled on, it gathered some collateral damage.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely, these were bad actors. Absolutely, it was good. It needed to be cleansed and it needed to be balanced. But what happened in the kink scene was that I was observing was a sort of a systemic problem was created in the kink scene. And once it was pointed out to me that there's allegations against him. Now, this is about a week in. I know him for about a week, Joshua.
Uh-huh.
And I am already kind of infatuated with him, with his world. The whole thing is just like
got me like this.
So you've got two worlds going on now. You've got your family, husband and kids, and then you've got Joshua on the other side.
Absolutely.
And you've already told your husband, well, they both know about each other. The family knows about Joshua. I don't know if the kids know, but husband knows, Joshua knows. How did you negotiate your life between the two?
Husband knew about kink. He knew about my interest in BDSM. He mm-hmm. did not know that there's a person involved in it, a singular person.
Okay.
He did not know that there's an affair evolving.
Gotcha. He didn't know that until later, or what did he finally find out, or you told him?
As things got more, I was constantly playing a sort of catch up with the truth, because it started out with an untruth, right? From the day one that I opened the door, I told my husband everything about BDSM, but I did not tell him about the one person who caught my eye, and that one person who became my mentor and my guide, and later my play partner, and later my master.
Mm-hmm.
But I will give you it all in a nutshell. As these things evolved, as the relationship evolved, I was constantly playing catch up with the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Right, sort of like telling him almost after the fact, this and this happened, this and this is happening, this and, you know, I'm going to another event, I'm going to do so and so, what am I allowed to do?
Mm-hmm.
But eventually, and he was sort of like, I had my fig leaf, let's put it like that.
Yeah.
Right? I was not exactly crossing the line. But then I crossed it.
Yeah.
Eventually, I just crossed it because it was, and it was horrible. It was a horrible period in my life because it's in the book. And it was because it was a period of new experiences and self-discovery and growth on one hand, and self-loss and self-denial and lies and guilt and just self-disgust on the other hand. And I could sense that there's something real here. There's something that pulls me, that is essential to me, that this is my path. I could sense that, and I would not let go of it. But I was also too afraid to tell my husband the truth, because this is my life, my family, and my home.
Yeah. Are you still eventually married now?
Yes.
Okay.
Eventually, it came to a head. I mean, cheating, living with somebody and lying to him about who you are and what you're doing is, it's deadly. It's almost like you wake up every morning and you pour a little cup of bleach into your coffee,
mm-hmm.
and you drink it and you go through the day like feeling like you're about to die, deadly sick. And you go through the day like that, and the next day you pour a little bit more bleach into your coffee.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it felt like to me. And
you're still married. How did you reconcile your two worlds?
Got it. The conflict was unresolvable, and I was stuck for a long time. until and between Joshua and I, the situation was, well, in my eyes, it was unclear because Joshua is poly, right? He has many women. Mm-hmm. And in my eyes, I was just another one. So I didn't know if I could trust him. I thought, this is my problem and I'm on my own in it. He's just the guy I'm doing this with.
Right.
But he's not going to help me. Which that was my kind of underlying assumption, just because I didn't understand poly. I didn't realize that. I mean, it's hard for people from the outside to understand what it means when somebody has multiple partners in their life, that he could be honest and okay with all of them. Mm-hmm. In my eyes, I was a cheater and he was a cheater who other people agreed to him cheating. And that was our only difference. And none of us were reliable. That's what I thought at the time. But it came to a head, right? I was, like I said, that was a terrible mental space to be in. Self-harm started to evolve. I was, you know, suicide became an option. Mm-hmm. Like, I was thinking about it a lot because, you know, I wasn't thinking about killing myself because I have my kids, but I was thinking about trying and taking myself out of the game and, like, you know, just maybe a rubber room somewhere for a while.
But the thing is, you thought about that, but did you ever think about quitting and just going back to the husband or quitting the husband? You didn't think about that.
The husband is impossible because it's impossible. These are my kids. This is my house. This is my family. Of course, I thought about quitting Joshua. I tried multiple times, but I kept getting pulled back. It's sort of like not pulled back by him, just pulled back by the fact that this is where my heart is. It's sort of like, you know, denying yourself of air.
Yes.
That's how it felt like. You wake up in the morning and there's no purpose to life, because the purpose to life, the thing that interested you and you're into, is beyond that wall that you put up. So you break that wall time and time again. And, you know, after a while, I was like, there's no point in me trying to leave again because I did it so many times and I keep failing because I don't want to.
Right.
So I came to Joshua and I showed him, like, self-harm was in play. I just held up my hands, showed him the cuts, and I was like, I need help. I need your help. Like, I'm asking you, not as long as it's a man-woman thing, lovers things, there's games to be played, there's power dynamics, but I'm asking you as a person.
Right.
Help me. And he thought about it and he came back with, like, okay, look, I know what you need to do. You have to tell your husband. And I'm like, I'm too afraid to. And he was like, here's a collar. You want me? You want my commitment? You want my obligation? You have them. You had them. You always had them, but you have them. Here's a collar. You can be my slave. I will be your master. But first, you need to tell your husband. And if you want to be my slave, you need to be obedient. You need to follow my instructions, because mm-hmm. I'm not going to waste my breath on somebody who's not following my instructions. And I will give you this collar if you will tell your husband the truth. And that's how it began to resolve. And I said, thank you, master. Mm-hmm. I will do whatever you say because I need help.
And this was months in or years in?
This happened about a little over a year in.
Okay.
There were a lot of stages that we skipped here for the sake of
No, that's fine. We'll have to get the book to do all that. But we'll end it with this. But your husband, apparently, at least until you tell me different, has accepted your dual lifestyle? Or is he now part of the dual lifestyle?
When I told my husband about it, of course he was deeply offended, deeply hurt. Also because he told me so. He told me he was scared that this is going to happen, and it happened.
Mm-hmm.
But I told him, this is who I am. Kinky is who I am. It's dominance and submission, sadism and masochism, pain, control, this sort of raw, visceral body exchange. It's who I am. And I can't step out of it any more than I could be not gay or mm-hmm. or not trans or not attracted to men. I can't disown this. And he accepted that he thought about it and he said, okay. And it took a few months and then a few months more, but eventually he came back and he said, you know, when I was in college, I used to talk about marriage being a false institute. I used to say people should become a cage for each other.
Uh-huh.
He said, now let's see if I can put my money where my mouth is, because it's what I believe. So, I mean, my husband, in my eyes, he's a hero.
Absolutely.
He's one of the people I respect most in the world. He's a straight arrow. And I owe him a lot. And he managed eventually to forgive me and to come to terms with what I'm doing. I mean, a few weeks ago, we were reorganizing the house, right? And he pulls out a box with all the books, right? There's this on the cover, right? This is the cover.
Yeah.
And he's like, where do you want to put this? And I'm like, he said, can I put it on the top shelf? And I'm like, no, because I use it for the podcast where I talk about the books. And he's like, well, I don't want to put it on the bottom because the kids might find it. And I was like, yeah, okay, so why don't we put it over there? And he's like moving boxes on the shelves and putting this for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, wow. I must be the luckiest person on earth. Look at that. I remember the point where he was like, I was considering suicide and he was considering divorce. That wasn't that long ago.
Yeah.
And now Joshua comes to visit in our house. And
okay. We're going to have to do like a whole extra episode on the relationship here. I love your story. I think it started out like in my mind, it started out as like this. And I think a lot of people's mind, BDSM is just like a sex chamber, torture chamber. But your story is, it's actually kind of a love story.
It's a love story.
Yeah.
It's absolutely a love story.
Yeah.
And BDSM gets a tough rap because because of its visuals, because of its how visceral it is. But it's really just a deeper, more direct way to engage. He's taking his, well, I'll leave that out. Never mind. Cut that part.
Okay.
I'll tell you privately.
You have been a fantastic guest. I want to do something with you that I do with everybody, and it's called a little game that I call This or That. And mm-hmm. it's just fun questions where I give you two options. You can choose one or the other, but not neither or both. And mm-hmm. if you want to at any time, explain yourself. You can. There's no context to the question, so whatever comes to your head, that's what we're going to talk about. Okay. So let's see. Let's start. I've got some already rewritten. I probably think of some on the fly too. What about? And we didn't get into this too much into the interview, but we'll get into that on the next one. What about whips or feathers?
Feathers.
Really? Okay.
Whips sting. Sorry, unpleasant.
Yeah, I guess so.
So if you ask flogger or feather, I'll take a flogger.
Really? Okay.
Flogger with a nice, like, thuddy hit to it.
But one thing I didn't ask you, and well, we'll do it with this or that. Do you prefer slave or dominant, the master?
To be?
Yeah. Or in general, just I give you those two words. Which do you prefer?
I'll do slave with Joshua and dominant and master with everybody else.
Oh, okay. So you do have the dual personality. It depends on who you're working with, I guess, talking to.
Well, like I told you in the beginning, it's all relative. Mm-hmm. I haven't found anybody else who I feel submissive to yet.
Okay. That makes sense.
And I doubt I will.
Nope. What about safe words in English or foreign languages?
Safe words?
Yeah. No because, safe words?
Kidding. No, people should totally use safe words.
Okay. You don't care which language they're in then?
I don't use safe words.
No safe words. Okay. What about writing about BDSM or practicing BDSM?
Both.
Both. We'll let you choose both on this one. It's an interesting subject. What about strict schedules or spontaneous scenes?
There is nobody I know that can keep this strict schedule so
Okay.
spontaneous.
Okay, you've written a book, but what do you prefer? BDSM themed movies or BDSM themed books?
Depends on the actors. Well, it's movies.
But how far away was 50 Shades? I've never seen it from at all. So how far was it away from truth?
Very far.
Very far.
Very far. Very
Okay.
far. I mean, there's some similarities, as in, tools are tools and spanking is spanking. It happens in the butt. Anatomy seemed largely in place. Other than that, nothing.
Okay. All right. If I ever watch it, then I will go like, this is not real.
Oh my God, the book. I'm talking about the book. The movie is ridiculous. There's nothing about it. Not even the anatomy.
Not even close. Okay. Now, we didn't talk about this either, but emotional play or physical play?
Both.
But you can't choose both.
I can't choose both emotional.
Okay. Let me see. Now, I don't know if this is true or not, but I looked this up. And what about long-term contracts or short-term scenes? Does it matter, or is it no such thing?
Between myself and Master Joshua, the contract thing was never like, I don't know if it's real. It didn't happen to me. It was
Okay.
sort of like a contract. Yeah, that happened in 50, but I don't know too many people that actually do that. And no offense to those who do. I don't know the entire world. So from my limited vantage point, I know nothing about contracts.
Okay. Now, you've written your book about Joshua and you and your fan and husband, I guess he's in it also. But what did you go with, memoir writing or investigative reporting now that you've done one or the
Memoir
other?
writing, because there's too much to know. And investigative reporter requires an understanding of the world and a confidence in your understanding that I do not have. If anything, I came to a confidence in my not knowing. I go to places like, teach me. I don't know. Teach
Okay.
me. So investigative reporter can't really do that.
Okay.
I just write what people tell me and put it on paper. Mostly it's mistakes, but that's how you learn.
Okay. I want people to be able to get in touch with you and keep learning about this. So we definitely have your website up there, survivingmasterjoshua.com.
Great.
And you've got your book that where did you end up putting it, by the way? Your
Everywhere.
book. No, I mean
Google it.
in your house, in your house, where'd you put it?
Oh, middle shelf behind this gray background that you see.
Okay. All right. So you've got your book, Surviving Master Joshua, the BDSM Memoir of an Unfaithful Wife, by Karma Said. I'm going to leave the website up on here as we roll
Thank you.
out, so people can get in touch with you and read the book and ask questions if they need to. Maybe participate in the scene one day. Who knows?
I didn't promise anything to anybody.
I didn't say
Jump in the
that
bed
you did.
with
Here we go. Thank you so much for being here. And we're going
Same.
to roll out with a little bit of music. And I super appreciate you.
Same here. Thank you so much.
Okay, bye-bye.